Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media that's dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host, and during this broadcast, we invite you to interact with us on our chat here on the EmotionalPro.com page. Actually, the chat on the EmotionalPro.com page, radio page, is down. We had some technical difficulties this week. So if you want to chat with us, go to blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. You can also call us on our toll-free number, 800-630-7858. That's 800-630-7858. Also for today's show, I've invited one of my favorite people and co-hosts, life coach Dakey Fox, to co-host with me. Dakey, are you on the line? Nope, she may not be here yet. Well, have you learned in recent years that you may have more say over what happens in your life than you were taught when you were growing up? Have you been told through The Secret and other books and movies that you can manifest your heart's desire by utilizing the law of attraction? We're all in the process of waking up, and for the first time in human history, we're becoming fully conscious, which means we're realizing that we are the architects of our lives. Now, in modern times, a lot of people who are now teaching these ideas and techniques learn from and were inspired by Robert Butts, Jane Roberts, and Seth. Who are they? Who's Jane Roberts? Who's Seth? That's what you're going to find out today right here on Full Power Living. Seth's ideas have been deeply influencing your world for many years now, and it's time you learn more about this amazing entity and what he has offered to our world and to each one of us, including you. Paul Helfrich is our guest today. You can find him at paulhelfrich.com. That's PAULHELFRICH.com on the web. For more than 30 years, Paul has been exploring the Seth materials as well as attending and presenting at Seth conferences since 1996. He was also the admin for the SethNet email list from 1998 to 2009. And regarding Seth, Paul is an essay author, a lecturer, and a workshop presenter who also talks about the channeling phenomenon and integral psychology. And he's a musician. His 2003 Mindscapes music CD is available on iTunes, Rhapsody, and CD Baby. Paul Helfrich, it's a privilege to have you with us on Full Power Living today. Welcome.
Good morning, Eileen.
For all the people who have never heard of Robert Butts or Jane Roberts and Seth, can we start by having you tell us who they are?
Sure. Jane Roberts lived from 1929 to 1984. She was an American author and writer and psychic who lived most of her life in Elmira, New York, and was married to Rob Butts, who passed away only recently in 2008. And he is also living with her in Elmira, New York. Together they explored something called the Seth phenomenon that produced 30 books of Seth material and an additional 16 books that Jane authored with the help of Rob, who added notes about various parts of the Seth material.
All right, thank you. So let's look at the channeling part of Jane Roberts, and I think most of our listeners are familiar with channeling, but since you teach people something about channeling, I'd like to give your take on channeling.
Yes, channeling, it's important to understand, you know, channeling, the medium is the message, as Marshall McLuhan famously said, and it applies really well in this case, because those of us who are familiar with it take it for granted, almost like breathing. But those who have not heard about it are often taken aback by it and don't really understand it. So the channeling phenomenon, in my view, and I've been researching this for the last 13 years pretty heavily, And I have come to the conclusion, I cannot prove it scientifically yet, but there's a lot of research that it may well be what we call a multiple intelligence that we all possess, and we all have an innate ability to channel in us. However, it's a latent potential for most of us. And by multiple intelligence, an example of that is our language ability, our mathematical, our musical, our interpersonal, our ethical abilities that we have. So channeling may well be a natural function of the body-mind. And there is a spectrum involved in channeling that we can generally say moves from a conscious sort of channeling to a fully developed deep trance sort of channeling. With conscious channeling on one end of the spectrum, the personality, let's just say myself, Paul Helfrich, is somewhat present but steps aside slightly and allows a creative energy tone to come through that accesses deeper areas of consciousness and information, including the realm of the afterlife, and other deep areas of information that some may know as the Akashic Record, things like that. On the other end of the spectrum, in terms of deep trance channeling, Paul Helfrich would simply go to sleep and be completely dissociated, and another personality or personality tone comes through, like Seth, and it has its own facial gestures and sense of humor and personality tone and access to other areas of information, including reincarnational information, other lifetimes and things like this that the waking Paul Helfrich has no way to normally access. So channeling, in general, provides deep sources of inner information to us. And over the centuries of history and different cultures, it has been with us in the written record for over 3,000 years. So as the scholars who have studied this in the last 100 years in the West can date it back to over 3,000 years ago. So it's something that's always been with us, but it's not very well known. So in religious traditions, it's known as speaking in tongues, and it is a formal part of various religious traditions. In the modern scientific view of things, it's considered a pathology or a disease, because any type of dissociation where Paul Helfrich is not in charge of himself is considered pathological. And then there's what I call an emerging postmodern perspective on this that understands that channeling may well be a multiple intelligence and a valid source of other information. So that's just a preamble to what channeling is itself. And that is what produced the Seth phenomenon.
That's a very clear answer. Thank you very much. As you were talking, I'm remembering sometimes I have a conversation with my husband, who's a very scientific type, and he goes, how can you trust somebody you don't know? How can you trust somebody you can't see? And that's part of the issue with channeling. Their process was fascinating. They put out volumes of material, and all of it came in the form of Jane doing the channeling, taking meticulous notes, including everything that Jane did, even when she wasn't. How many books in all? I've read several of them, but is it 46 books or over 20 years? How much material was actually put out by these?
And I just want to say, Eileen, I'm getting your voice breaking up a little bit on my end. I will answer this question. I don't know if the technical people in the background can kind of check on your signal, but
we are working on it here. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, great. Yes, there are 46 books, and 30 of them are Seth material. Now, what they would do, what they agreed to early on when Seth first came through on a Ouija board and Jane was investigating writing a book on developing ESP powers, they agreed to a format of twice a week that they would work together, and basically Jane would go into an altered state, and once she rapidly moved off of the Ouija board into dictation, and Rob took everything down by hand. This was in the day before personal computers and digital recorders. So within that two sessions a week format, over the years, they had over 1,800 formal recorded sessions that turned into various Seth books that we know today. But later, after Jane's death, actually as Jane was in her last months, she asked Rob to publish all of the material so that we have an array of Seth books that contain other sessions that are known as the early sessions and the deleted sessions or personal sessions, and then even the ESP classes that were held in addition to the book sessions have finally been published now. So those are the 30 books of Seth material. Of the 30 books, 10 of them form the basic canon, as it were, of the Seth material that most of us in my generation, people who are over 40, over 50, who grew up with this in the late 60s and 70s and thereafter. So that, of those 10 books, certainly Seth Speaks and The Nature of Personal Reality, the two that you quoted on your webpage for today's talk, are the best sellers of the entire 30 books and probably have been read by the most people. And those books are about close to 1,000 pages together. So it's a lot of esoteric and metaphysical ideas in just those two books alone. So you can imagine trying to wade through 30 books of Seth sessions takes quite a bit of time to digest. Are you still there?
I'm here, Paul. This is Dakey.
Oh, yes. Hi, Dakey. How are you?
Good. It's nice to meet you. I've been lurking here. And, you know, as you talk about the history and the presence of all of the Jane Roberts' work and Seth's voice, what I was recalling was that the impact of the Seth material was like a loud, roaring voice saying, you create your reality, that came into our lives. And what I kept marveling at was how that information hit the scene, and it's almost like the yardstick on reality that Seth presented, we then grasped firmly and began to beat ourselves on the back and head with, because it was like, well, then it must be my fault that my reality isn't what I want it to be or whatever. And I just wondered if that was a phenomenon you observed as well.
Oh, absolutely. Growing up in the 60s and 70s was a revolutionary time for us baby boomers. And having the Seth material was a breath of fresh air and sort of helped to organize and reorient some of the craziness that I think a lot of us were experiencing. And as you suggested, the notion that you create your own reality really requires a major reorientation from the mentality of victimhood, and that everything's outside of you, there's a whole world outside of you that is against you somehow, that the universe is unsafe, and all of the different belief systems involved with that. And when you start exploring the notion that you create your own reality, you realize that in one sense there are no victims, there are no accidents, that everything is being generated by your own belief systems, your own thoughts, your own emotions, and so on. And that can have a positive and negative effect, but at the time for me, and I think for many people early on, it kind of blows your mind and opens up all kinds of new possibilities. And again, a reorientation is required because you then have to take responsibility for everything in your life, for the good and the bad, for the true and the false.
So. But Paul, my husband's first wife, who was his high school sweetheart, he really cared very much for her. She died of cancer when just short of their 25th wedding anniversary. And she was trying to take responsibility for her health by doing visualization and so forth, trying to heal herself of the cancer, and obviously it didn't work. But a number of people at that time who were around her whenever her cancer started to get worse chastised her that she wasn't taking enough responsibility. You know, how do we reconcile that? That we're responsible, yet we also have illnesses or things that go awry with us and so forth. How do we reconcile those two?
That's a great question, and it's complicated. Of course, as you wade through Seth's ideas and try to organize them, when dealing with a terminal illness, there's many, many belief systems involved. And I think to be fair, we really have to look at each case personally and in detail. So for now, we're talking about the husband's ex-wife who died of cancer in her situation. And as Seth, in a session, would tune into her energy and her life situation, he would offer an answer specifically tailored for her life circumstances. So I'll speak in some generalizations, too, because I don't know her and what the causes are, and of necessity have to approach it that way. But some of the things involved with a terminal illness, of course, is the belief system of death. And if you believe that you create your own reality, the question then inevitably comes up, do you create your own death? And this is something that in all of the wisdom traditions and the esoteric traditions, you do as a student on the path, so to speak, receive training with and approach. So just taking the notion that you create your own reality sort of out of context and without the full support of other ideas in Seth's, let's just call it a concept map, leads to just a paltry result. So not doing enough to cure yourself of cancer is a form of New Age guilt, as we call it sometimes too. And you have to be evolved enough and developed enough in your own stage of development to understand how these things are working. So another way to approach this, and I'm just trying to plant some seeds for our ongoing conversation today too that we can develop as we go here. One of the questions I ask early on as we're studying this with new people is the question, who is the you who creates all of its reality? And this is something that you can meditate on for years and really use as a mantra almost to dip into. And this you, the more you explore it, particularly from a Sethian perspective, turns into a vast, multidimensional self that ultimately ends up nested within God, or what he calls all that is itself. And you realize that you are nested within all that is, and you are a part or an aspect of all that is. And as a physical being, we live and we die. But as a non-physical being, we also, this you who is creating all of your reality, has a supercharged, superpowered aircraft carrier of a soul, or what Seth called the entity, that is managing all of the source energy used for physical reality creation. So I'm bumping it up a level into the soul realm. So we have the physical realm, which has the body, mind, and the Paul Helfrich, I'll use myself as an example, who lives and dies and perhaps contracts symptoms of cancer. So at the soul level, the soul is there dealing with multiple lifetimes. So there's a reincarnational perspective that we have to take into consideration. And from the Sethian perspective and the Seth material, the belief system of reincarnation is real and valid, although there are distortions of it out there in different spiritual interpretations of it, and so on and so forth. So this soul or entity manifests multiple lifetimes and multiple reincarnations, but from the soul's perspective, they're all simultaneous. From my physical, Paul Helfrich perspective, it's linear. I live one life at a time, and I live one day in order, in sequence. But from the soul's perspective, if I have 100 or 1,000 lifetimes in this physical reality, from the soul's perspective, they are happening all at once. So back to the example of cancer and a terminal illness, that illness, of course, affects Paul Helfrich's life as he's dying, perhaps, and choosing to die at a different level. So perhaps I'll leave it there and see if I've generated some other questions.
I'm reminded, as you speak of that in the simultaneous lives from the soul's point of view, Paul, that when I read the Oversoul 7 books by Seth and Jane Roberts, that what occurred to me that was revolutionary, that I'm still, you know, sniffing the trail on, is the fact that we can connect in a future life as easily as even then we were already doing past life regression, and perhaps connect with that at a soul level to better understand our purpose in this life, like the one that we're living, as you said, in the linear fashion of day to day. And so I'm wondering what exploration or consideration you've had of that in real life, or what you know of other people doing in that realm.
And let me interrupt here. We need to take a break. So, Paul, you get a minute and a half to think it over, and we'll come back, okay?
Okay.
All right, we're talking today with Paul Helfrich, Ph.D., author, lecturer, musician, and Seth scholar for over the past 30 years. And we're talking about Seth and the nature of personal reality. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Living with Eileen Dillon.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes? Or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. We're talking today with Paul Helfrich, who's an expert on the Seth material. And before the break, Dakey, I'd like you just to briefly restate your question so that we can have Paul answer it. It's a really great question.
Well, sure. The consideration is what Paul, you were saying about our lives from a soul level being lived simultaneously, as many as however many hundreds or thousands that the soul has engaged in this realm, it being different from this life where we're living it in a linear fashion day to day, and the soul lives them all simultaneously. So this now popular idea of doing past life regressions flipped for me when I read the Oversoul 7 books, and I wondered, can we get guidance about this day to day linear life by flipping into a future life or a future time so that we know how to live more on purpose?
Absolutely. The Oversoul 7 books, by the way, are not Seth books, just to clarify that for the audience. They're fictional stories written by Jane that were channeled, however. She did them through automatic writing, and they are amongst my favorites, really, of the entire set of work, because it playfully puts Seth's ideas in a visionary fiction framework. And in the first Oversoul 7 book called The Education of Oversoul 7, there are four personalities of Oversoul 7 living in four different time zones, ranging from 30,000 BC to the 17th century Denmark to 20th century United States to 24th century future time. And Oversoul 7 is trying to earn his Oversoul 8 stripes and learn to manage his personalities in simultaneous time. So it's a very playful way of exploring some of these very complex ideas. Now, as Decky mentioned, that flipping from past life regression, which from our linear perspective, we're familiar with the past, so it makes sense that we have past lives, but that the future is existing simultaneously, is a major revelation, I think, in terms of our esoteric maps that have been presented to us throughout the centuries, and at least what's coming down to us. So, yes, you can switch the tables and tune into a future lifetime. However, it is more difficult because for basic reasons in the space-time continuity, there are things that can be changed, and there's plenty of science fiction themes around us in the media, movies, books, that explore these themes of changing something. So when we contact a future self or even a past self in a legitimate, authentic, transpersonal, therapeutic framework, we change each other. And it must be handled very cautiously. So at the soul level, there is some kind of ethical consideration involved with allowing this to happen, and it does involve an evolutionary trajectory of increasing complexity of evolving stages of consciousness, and we are in a particular cultural stage of consciousness right now that's pretty far along, but still has a far way to go. So the other conceptual point here is the notion of simultaneous time, and it's in the first Oversoul 7 book where I finally got it on a second reading, where Seven learns at the end of one of his exams from his teacher, Cypress, the nine forms of time. And if you just matrix past, present, and future, each one has a past, present, and future. You get 3 times 3, or 9 variations of time from the soul perspective. Now, your head's probably reeling right now just trying to cognitively grasp that, and it's almost impossible to cognitively grasp for us, which leads to the question of why is this information being delivered to us at this point in history? And that's an open question still. We're still unpacking that. We're still exploring that. We have a long way to go. As I like to say when I talk about the Seth material, Jane passed away in 84, so Seth's voice has only been silent for less than 30 years now, and we're still unpacking the material. So it's the nature of revelatory material to be delivered in that it's a half step or a whole step in evolutionary terms ahead of the curve, so to speak, to draw us forward into the future, which kind of connects to accessing future lives and so on. But typically, I think, to come back to past life regression therapy and even future progression therapy, there has to be a therapeutic win-win involved in both of the personalities. And I have, in lucid dream state, accessed a future life, which was a woman, and she was in her 30s, and she was surprised, she was shocked that I actually came and met her there, actually in her bedroom. She was sitting on her bed when I came into this environment, and she was amazed. She knew who I was. She knew I was an ancestor of hers, and I asked her to tell me more, but she told me, "You know I cannot tell you that." And that kind of blew me away. And then I lapsed back into the dream state. Of course, there's more in my dream journal. I'd have to go back and find those details. But the point here is that I validated that concept through my own direct experience. And that was therapeutic for me in the sense of validating these ideas. Because as I'm talking to you and our audience today, you have to be maintaining a skeptical approach to these ideas, saying some of this sounds like science fiction or nonsense. And Seth promotes a healthy sense of skepticism in studying these ideas, in that we ultimately have to verify or falsify them in the laboratory of our own direct experience. And this is something that drew me to Seth's teaching, and any teachers, there's other teachers out there that take the same approach, that they're not so much the sage on the stage, as it were, or the guru and final arbiter of these ideas. They present these ideas to us, and they present practices, or, you know, yoga is one example of that, in which to pursue these things, meditation, other practices, to verify or falsify these ideas. So I'll just leave it at that.
Well, Paul, this is Eileen, and I did have an experience of going to a past life. I have a number of past life connections with my son, who's now in his 30s, and through Dakey's former husband, John Fox, who channels Hilarion, I had learned that I was once in service to him as a prince, and I was not very happy with him, and I thought it was kind of amazing that he would be my son, and I every day tell him how much I love him. On my own, I found a lifetime where the two of us were friends, and as soldiers, we ended up on different sides in a war, and I was trying to save him, and my side took him out on a winding river and tortured him to death, and I could hear him screaming, but I couldn't rescue him. And I told him about that one day when he was about 10 years old, and he was immediately furious with me. And he never skipped a beat. He just said, "Yes, for God's sake, why didn't you come and get me? You know, that was our deal." And I apologized to him in this lifetime, and it made a huge difference. It healed something between us. So you can go forward or back.
Exactly, and it's just, yeah. In Seth Speaks, Seth mentioned, just made a, in passing sort of comment, that future lives will continue to be veiled for practical reasons. And the practical reasons include changing the future by presenting, past information, like the answer, you know, who won the 1943 World Series or who won the 2211 NBA championship coming back into the, whatever. It suddenly can make all kinds of changes of certain factual information being given. So there's other practical considerations, too.
Well, I do have something of a collective follow-up on that, though, and that is that when we heal in this lifetime, I enjoy the term the sacred wound, the wounding that we've had, and come to an understanding that sometimes those wounds are inherited from either the culture or the society. And when we can heal them in ourselves and be clearer about our steps in this lifetime forward, is it true, or what do you think about that, that when we heal forwards and backwards through that line of our soul connections and all the contexts we have?
Great.
That's absolutely right. From this perspective of the soul and simultaneous time, the past, the present, the future are not finished. So from our perspective in the present now of our past, we think, oh, that event was done. I got a B+ on that test, or I had this for dinner, or I wore this outfit. But there is fresh action emerging from the past in ways we don't understand yet. But this has been revealed to us by Seth, that there are ways then for therapeutic reasons to go back, and particularly with what you're referring to as a sacred wound, are the scars of the lifetime that we deal with, that we create as we create our own realities, that we can heal anything. We can change everything. It's not as easy as just thinking about it. There's a lot of statements in the Seth books where Seth says something to the effect of thoughts create reality, but sometimes that can be interpreted very literally, and thoughts alone are not 100% causal. Thoughts alone are not the entire you who creates all of your reality. So thoughts are a very important part of it. But this then leads us back to something in the nature of personal reality of belief systems, and we haven't talked about that yet, so maybe it's time to just bring that up. And something that Seth pointed out in that classic bestseller, The Nature of Personal Reality, in 1974, that beliefs, our belief systems, generate our thoughts and emotions. So when you're in an emotional state and you're even thinking about things and thoughts are coming through your conscious mind, those are all reflections of a deeper psychic structure that we just call belief systems. They are hardwired into the brain. Obviously, we know from brain disease and brain research that when parts of the brain are affected, our belief structures do change. But the beliefs go even deeper into the soul or entity layer of self. And so they are transcendent to the physical body mind, as it were. So they come from the soul itself, these belief systems, but they are filtered then through the structure of the body mind and its neurology, its brain chemistry, its body chemistry, and so on. So there's also then a biology of reality creation. There's a, from the Sethian perspective, at the cellular level, he talks about cellular reality and reality creation. He talks about a physics of reality creation where we get these abstract things called consciousness units and electromagnetic energy units. There's a psychology of reality creation, which we were just talking about in terms of belief systems and emotions, impressions, impulses, imagination, those things. And then there's a metaphysics of reality creation where we talk about all that is in the soul and simultaneous time and reincarnation. And one other concept we haven't brought up today, which is probable selves, probable realities. So there's four basic nested parts of reality creation and this you who's creating it all. And even though I know this sounds very technical and complex, it's really that simple once you get your head around the map, I think, that Seth has presented. And anyway, that's part of the work I've been doing for the last 30 years in reading and trying to simplify and present it in more simple terms, this complex map that Seth has presented to us.
Well, Paul, one of the things, you know, I read these books, in the fairly early 70s I started reading them, I think. Whatever time they started coming out, that's when I was reading them. And one of the things that thrilled me, as a psychotherapist, you know, we've been taught that your mind is so complex, kind of a Freudian term here that you can't know what's inside of it. And when I read The Nature of Personal Reality, then I thought, wait a minute, I can find out what my own beliefs are. And I started with this process. When I would have an experience, I would say, well, what would I have to believe in order to create this experience? And I would thrust around, and one would then feel right to me. That's on the intuitive level. And then I would look at it and decide whether I wanted to change it. And then I discovered I could change it just by repeatedly feeding a new belief to my mind. Now, that's on a kind of a personality level, that change. But I think most people don't realize they can even change beliefs on that level.
That's right. The psychology of reality creation requires introspection. And what Seth provides are exercises and practices to help you introspect, pay attention to your own thought processes, and probe back even further in your own awareness and your own motivations and your own experience to identify, as you were saying, what was the belief that led to this reaction or perception of this event, of what this person said to me or what I did or how I felt. And once you can identify a belief, you know, you've got gold on your hands, because then you can address to that belief and neutralize it, essentially. We don't eliminate beliefs. When we're changing, what Seth talks about, change your beliefs, change your reality, and it's very true. But one thing we have to realize in the mechanics of this, that we're not eliminating them or getting rid of them. We're really neutralizing them, making them inert. But they still exist in potential. So that issue may suddenly, if energy is given to it, it can pop right back up and bite you in the proverbial butt and come back full force again. So, and anyone who's done belief work can testify to that. So the key thing here then is to begin with belief work from a layperson, so to speak, point of view, is some type of introspective practice where you can start to notice and identify and recognize the different beliefs that you're holding, and feelings or emotions are traceable to the beliefs. Your thoughts, the chronic chatter of your own mind as you're reinforcing. If you're paying attention to yourself, you'll notice your own self-talk. These are all reflecting beliefs, and the beliefs are right there for you to identify. But it takes concentration and focus, and we're taught that, no, you can't do it. The doctor has to do it for you, and so you need a professional mediator. And that's a general cultural value we've been given that we've grown up in. So we're not taught to be introspective by nature, and we're even discouraged from doing that, from daydreaming and being overly imaginative or overly creative in our schooling and other social interactions. So learning to be introspective is absolutely crucial and one of the foundational practices of building upon Seth's ideas.
You know, we've come up to a second break, so let's take that. And when we come back, I want you to tell us, Paul, some of the things that you're doing now and what people can find on your website and also perhaps we can talk a little bit about dreams and the importance of dreams. We're talking today with Paul Helfrich, PhD, who's author, lecturer, musician, and Seth scholar. We're talking about Seth and the nature of your personal reality. This is Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
Living with Eileen Dillon.
Everybody feels anger, but if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the emotional pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com. All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. Please offer us your comments or questions. Today you need to do it on the chat on blogtalkradio.com/FPL. And on this live broadcast right now, you can call us at 800-630-7858. That's 800-630-7858. And if you miss us live, you can download our archived podcast from the radio show page on emotionalpro.com or subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. And thank you very much for telling your friends and family about all they can discover through Full Power Living and for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. And please keep writing. This morning I had email from a listener in China who joins us with others from the Russian Federation, Switzerland, South America, and Australia. We want to know where you are when you're listening to Full Power Living, so keep writing. Next week we have Mary Lamia, who is author of A Kid's Guide to Intense Emotions. And one of the things I've discovered about books like this is that the advice is good for parents who have children, but it's also good for us doing our inner child work and internal growth. So if your inner child still needs some help, be sure to listen to Mary. Today we've got a co-host, life coach Dakey Fox. And Dakey, do you want to take just a minute to tell us a little bit about yourself? You haven't been on the show in a long time, and how you channel it. We don't have much time, so do it fast.
Okay, I'll do it really fast. Hello, I'm Dakey Fox. And I enjoy helping people through my coaching work, particularly the life purpose coaching at this point in time, which is why I'm so interested in the conversation today. So I think that's enough, and move along, because I'd rather hear Paul.
Okay, all right. And today our guest is Paul Helfrich, who has studied for 30 years and lectured and run a e-list on Seth. And Paul, tell us just very, again, briefly, how you got interested in Seth, I know you've got a book in the works that you're shopping for a publisher for, and sort of what you're doing now and what people can find on your website.
Okay, I just want to add one thought I had during the break, too, about introspection and the therapy that life coaches do and that you do, Eileen, as therapists. You really do teach your clients through repetition to become introspective and pay attention and start to self-identify and self-correct, ideally, and that's when healing occurs. So I just wanted to reinforce that point. That's quite a beautiful consonance with the Sethian ideas. And for myself, I first read Seth Speaks in 1976 as a 21-year-old home on break from Penn State as a music major, and it totally rocked my world. And I had an epiphany in the first hour of reading the book. I started very skeptical. He says in the beginning, "I do not have a body, yet I am writing a book. How can this be?" And my eyes are rolling. It's like, yeah, okay. But my brother really wanted me to read this book, and so I will pay due diligence. But again, suddenly things started adding up, and a remembrance, a deep remembrance was triggered. From this book, I voraciously devoured it and then bought every Jane Roberts book I could get my hands on, which was about 4 or 5 at the time, and then just continued full whole hog there, which led to my interest in the Seth material. I grew up in a secular humanist family. My father was an electrical engineer, so we were very rational, very modern, and not religious or spiritual at all. Although spiritual in the sense of Mr. Spock, that rational scientific means would answer, you know, the mind of God somehow. But so I didn't have much education in religious studies at that time, and so the Seth Speaks provided me with a much needed framework to explore that, and also with practical exercises. Almost all the Seth books contain exercises to test the waters through our direct experience. And so that led into my interest in Seth and a spiritual framework, which then as my career as a music student and then working in a science museum for 10 years in Philadelphia progressed, was not being nurtured enough. And that led then to a break from that and a more serious study and meditation practice and other spiritual paths and whatnot. And I do want to mention today also the work of Ken Wilber, who's one of my main teachers. And he's the integral psychologist, amongst other labels we can use to describe his work. But it's rooted deeply in transpersonal psychology and that movement from the 70s. And his integral system is something that I use as a framework to help understand God, life, the universe, and everything. And so with the Seth material, since it talks about that, it provided me with a framework to help interpret that and then to teach it to myself and teach it to others. And so on my website, paulhelfrich.com, there's a publications area where you can see the writings that I have done over the years there, and it includes something called Integral Conscious Creation, Rocket Science for the Soul, which is a theoretical, more high-end approach to try and understand these things. And other articles and things that I've done there. I have been working on a book for the last 2.5 years, that, and am seeking a publisher for that still. And in the meantime, also working on an online course, which we hope to roll out later this year. And that's something, for those who might be interested in that, can check newworldview.com. And there's some information on that just to ground that. But it will basically be a foundations course. And it's the working title right now is Foundations for a Spiritual Life. And it is a broad overview to Sethian principles, which we look at generally as yourself, your world, and how we can all get along. Those three areas really I get from Ken Wilber's work, but it's a way that allows me to tell the story of Seth's ideas and introduce his practices in a nice way that if you're interested in developing your dreaming work, your meditative life, even healing work, and so on, these ideas are there.
Okay, that's newworldview.com. And thank you for telling us about that, because I'm so aware that there's so much to discuss, and we're barely even scratching the surface of what we had hoped to discuss today, so that it's very important people have a forum for doing that. We actually have a caller. Richard has a question. So, Richard, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. It's not really a question. It's just a little a reflection about my experiences of what okay. Paul was talking about earlier. And you guys have been talking about the past, the present, and the future, but the present is the most important. And just as what Paul was saying about being aware of your actions, I've realized and found out and came in contact with my own inner nature simply by realizing that certain feelings of the body and that of in relationship to past thoughts, if you're able to remember or have a feeling for a particular moment, it could be a vibration or it could be a rumble in the ear or just a gut feeling, and if you could just reflect back what you were thinking about, you can actually, with acknowledgement and practice, you can come to communication with your own self. And it's a very difficult process because you have to remember what you were doing. And it's hard to do things like that. And as I said, it's important to realize what you're creating, and you have to do it through your own inner self. And it's a very hard, difficult process.
Thank you. Thank you for telling us about that. Richard, I appreciate your call. Paul, do you have comments on that?
Just to agree with him, but I would also reinforce that with practice and having a personal practice that you tailor to your own situation, I don't like to reinforce the fact that it's hard or difficult, that really we can climb any mountain we choose to set our sights on. There may be difficulties, but there's actually an effortlessness which comes with the work in time, and that is speaking of from decades of experience. So it is difficult when you're starting out, and it's easy to get frustrated and stop. And in fact, I would estimate that 80-90%+ of people start trying some of these exercises, exploring these things, as Richard was just saying, noticing a particular body symptom or feeling, and then trying to backtrack in the thought process as to where he was that led into that, that opens the door to inner awareness and inner information. And getting good at that, it does require practice.
But there's one drawback, if I can interject.
Sure.
The drawback is once you come in contact with your inner nature, your soul, it will test you to the extremes of health and everything else. I got in a situation where I lost 30-some pounds after I got in contact with myself. And the problem is there, you have to overcome all fear, and the fear of death especially. And the inner nature puts you on a test of life in a sense. And it's hard to overcome in some respects because of the fact that you are dealing with health and mind conflict. And as I said, but it's very important to come in contact with yourself because you're not going to move spiritually very far without that help. The help from the inner nature is extremely important, but you have to be very open-minded and as I know you haven't talked much about Elias, but you have to remove judgment from your mind completely.
We really appreciate your comment, Richard. We're going to have to move on now because our time is running really short. And let's Paul give you an opportunity to comment on what Richard's been saying.
Yes, in terms of that difficulty, one of the issues in deep core beliefs that we have to address to when doing this kind of work is the fear of death as egoic annihilation, as the outer ego, as it's called, the Paul Helfrich fear of death, that Paul Helfrich will be annihilated when his body ceases to function. And this is what any authentic spiritual path deals with this. And very quickly, I had an experience early on, about 4 or 5 years into my studies, which was a lucid dream. It took place in my, what I call my ancestral home, the house I grew up in and left some 20-plus years ago, in which I walked into my parents' bedroom, and just symbolically, the parents' bedroom is a place of love and care and kindness and deep nurturing and safety. So it was a safe environment. I walk in there, and I confront my deceased grandfather, who had recently passed away, and immediately he presented himself in a very stereotypical Hollywood corpse, zombie, green, misshapen face. And I simply looked at dear Grandpa Max in the eye, and something from deep within me, from my inner self, came out in biblical language, and I simply said, I fear thee not. He immediately turned into a very healthy-looking, normal, healthy self, and there was this amazing love and reconciliation that was profoundly impressed on my waking self that I brought back into the waking self. And it was my first attempt at understanding that death was not an annihilation. And certainly the dream practices in the Seth material lead to lucid dreaming and out-of-body projections. And you have to know what you're doing and you have to have some guidance and help. I don't recommend that you go off and do it on your own as I was doing back in the 70s and 80s by myself. And so... fear of death as annihilation is a core belief system that we must confront early on in our training, and we can reap additional rewards as we go further once we get over that hump.
All right. Thank you. You know, there's so much more I wanted to talk with you about. I wanted to talk with you about the emotions as the language of the universe and how we transform ourselves and whether we can hold a space for transformation for others. And I wanted to explore dreams more, but we have to stop, unfortunately. So that's Paul Helfrich, PaulHelfrich.com or newworldview.com. And Paul, thank you so much for being with us. I'm hoping that we can get you back on the show another time because I'd like to explore some of these other things.
I would love to. That would be great.
Okay, great. Thank you for being with us today. I appreciate your time, and thanks for all your work over the years on this so that you can clarify these things for us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Eileen.
Next week, we're talking with Mary Lamia about A Kid's Guide to Intense Emotion. And the week after, we're featuring our own producer, Paul, and Robert Harry Roven, as they talk with Dakey and me about emotional experiences from their childhoods and how that influenced their lives as adults. So join us on Thursdays, 9 a.m. Pacific and noon Eastern Time for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. Thank you, Paul Johnston, for a great sound. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillow. Thank you, Dakey Fox. You're here. I'm so sorry to cut off so quickly. Thank you for being with us today, and I hope you'll come back and talk with Paul with me again, too.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much, Eileen, for creating this space.
Okay. I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.